This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of rehab and prosthetics from the basic science section on orthobullets.com. The goal of prosthetics is to restore limb function to as close to original function. It requires a multidisciplinary team approach for coordination of efforts to achieve the best outcome. As far as prosthetics, you can have upper limb prosthetics or lower limb prosthetics. In the upper limb, limb salvage is ideal in the upper arm, given lack of sensation with the prosthetic. Residual limb length is important for suspending the prosthetic socket. In the lower limb, the goals for prosthetics are comfort, easy to get on and off, light, durable, cosmetic, and functional. Now we'll talk about gait, upper extremity prostheses, lower extremity prostheses, and prosthetic complications in a bit more detail. So starting with gait, antalgic gait describes any gait abnormality resulting from pain, and this can be secondary to a shortened stance phase on the affected limb. As far as gait pattern of ambulation with an assistive device, there is a 3-point gait pattern, a 4-point gait pattern, a swing-to gait, and a swing-through gait. A 3-point gait pattern is when both the crutch and the injured limb move forward together with weight bearing on the crutches, followed by all of the weight on the uninjured limb. Again, a 3-point gait pattern is when both the crutch and the injured limb move forward together with weight bearing on the crutches, followed by all of the weight on the uninjured limb. As far as crutch walking, this requires more energy than walking with a prosthesis. Muscles that need strengthening in preparation for crutch walking include the latissimus dorsi, triceps and biceps, quads, hip extensors, and hip abductors. As far as wheelchair propulsion, there is a 9% increase in energy expenditure compared to ambulation in normal subjects. And as far as ambulation assistive devices, the ones to know include the cane and the axillary crutch. A cane shifts the center of gravity towards the affected side when the cane is used on the contralateral side. Again, a cane shifts the center of gravity towards the affected side when the cane is used on the contralateral side. As far as an axillary crutch, 2 axillary crutches are required for proper gait if the lower extremity is non-weight-bearing or toe-touch weight-bearing. Now let's talk about upper extremity prostheses in a bit more detail. Remember that timing of prosthetic fitting should be done as soon as possible, even before complete wound healing has completed. Remember that patients will have better outcomes if fitted within 30 days. In the setting of a mid-length transradial amputation, there are 2 major options for prostheses. That is a myoelectric prosthesis and a body-powered prosthesis. The best candidate for a myoelectric prosthesis is a patient with a mid-length transradial amputation. Again, the best candidate for a myoelectric prosthesis is a patient with a mid-length transradial amputation. This prosthesis transmits electrical activity to surface electrodes on residual limb muscles. The advantage of this option is that it has better cosmesis and allows more proximal coverage. Disadvantages are that it's heavier and more expensive and requires more maintenance. A body-powered prosthesis is best for heavy labor with less maintenance needed. Remember that with a body-powered prosthesis, you have to activate the terminal device with shoulder flexion and abduction. You will also have to center the harness ring just off the midline of C7 towards the non-amputated side. The advantages of a body-powered prosthesis is that it has moderate cost and weight, it's the most durable prosthesis, and it has higher sensory feedback. The disadvantages are that it has poorer cosmesis and requires more gross upper limb movement for proper function. In the setting of an elbow disarticulation or above elbow amputation, this requires a prosthesis to recreate functional motion of 2 joints, that is the elbow and the wrist. So in this setting, heavy and less efficient is the only solution. Best function with least weight is achieved by combining the various options of myoelectric, body-powered, and body-driven switch components. In the setting of a proximal transhumeral and shoulder disarticulation amputation, an amputation this proximal has lost the ability to create a lever arm with a mechanical advantage. So the best option is a universal shoulder joint that is positioned in space with the contralateral arm. This can be combined with lightweight hybrid prosthetic components. So as far as components for upper extremity prostheses, it's important to understand the concepts of a terminal device, wrist units, elbow units, and shoulder units. So with respect to a terminal device, you have a passive terminal device and an active terminal device. A passive terminal device is more cosmetic but less functional than active terminal devices. And an active terminal device is more functional but less cosmetic than passive terminal devices. An active terminal device will have either hooks and prosthetic hands with cables or myoelectric devices. As far as grips for an upper extremity prosthesis, the ones to know include a precision grip or a pincer type, a tripod grip, which is also known as a palmar grip or a three-jaw chuck pinch, a lateral pinch, otherwise known as a key pinch, a hook power grip, and a spherical grip. As far as prehension devices, the ones to know include a hand-like device, a non-hand prehension device, and myoelectric devices. A hand-like device has a thumb, index, and long finger components. It may be covered with a glove for better cosmesis, and this is a good choice for an office worker. Non-hand prehension devices have a hook or two-finger pincer with parallel surfaces. With this option, you may attach task-specific tools with a quick-release mechanism, and this is good for physical labor. Myoelectric devices can only be used in an environment clean from dirt, dust, water, grease, or solvents. Some mechanisms to understand include voluntary opening and voluntary closing. In voluntary opening, the device is closed at rest and opens with contraction of the proximal muscles. This is more common than voluntary closing. In voluntary closing, the device is open at rest and residual forearm flexors grip the desired object. This is heavier and less durable than voluntary opening. Moving on to wrist units, the ones to know include a quick disconnect wrist, a locking wrist unit, and a wrist flexion unit. A quick disconnect wrist allows easy swapping of devices with specialized function. A locking wrist unit prevents rotation during grasping and lifting. And a wrist flexion unit is used in bilateral upper extremity amputees and is placed on longer residual limbs to allow midline activities such as shaving and or buttoning. Moving on to elbow units, the two to know include a rigid elbow hinge and a flexible elbow hinge. A rigid elbow hinge is indicated in the setting of a short transradial amputation with inability to pronate or supinate with maintenance of elbow flexion. A flexible elbow hinge is indicated in the setting of a wrist disarticulation or long transradial amputation with sufficient pronation, supination, and elbow flexion and extension. Finally, with respect to shoulder units, due to increased energy expenditure and weight of the prosthesis, many choose to use a purely cosmetic prosthesis, and the indications for a shoulder unit is a forequarter or shoulder-level amputation. Moving on to lower limb prostheses, let's start off talking about a foot prosthesis, and the ones to know include a single-axis foot, a satch or a solid ankle cushioned heel foot, a dynamic response or an energy-storing foot, and shanks. So a single-axis foot is an ankle hinge that allows dorsiflexion and plantar flexion. The disadvantages are poor durability and cosmesis. A satch, or a solid ankle cushioned heeled foot, is indicated for general use in patients with low activity levels. However, keep in mind that the use of this option is being phased out. The disadvantages is that it overloads the non-amputated foot. A dynamic response or energy storing foot is indicated for general use for most normal activities. Keep in mind that patients who regularly ambulate over uneven surfaces will likely benefit from a multi-axial articulated prosthesis. Articulating and non-articulating dynamic response foot prostheses are available. So an articulating dynamic response foot allows inversion, eversion, and rotation of the foot. This is indicated for patients that are walking on uneven surfaces. The advantages of an articulating dynamic response foot is that it allows inversion, eversion, and foot rotation, it absorbs loads and decreases shear forces, and it also has flexible keels, which acts as a spring to decrease contralateral loading, allow dorsiflexion, and provide a spring-like push-off. A posterior projection from the keel gives a smooth transition from heel strike, and a sagittal split allows for inversion and eversion. A non-articulating dynamic response foot has short or long keels. Shorter keels are not as responsive and are indicated for moderate activity patients. Longer keels are indicated for high demand patients. And keep in mind that there are different feet for running and lower demand activities that are available. Finally, Shanks provides structural support between components. There is an endoskeleton or a soft exterior, or an exoskeleton model which has a hard exterior. These can provide a lever arm for propulsion following transmetatarsal amputation. Moving on to a knee prosthesis, this is indicated for transfemoral and knee disarticulation amputations. Patient functional status is an important consideration. Now let's talk about the six types of prostheses for an above-knee or through-knee amputation. And these are a polycentric, otherwise known as a four-bar linkage knee, stance phase control or a weight-activated knee, fluid control, otherwise known as a hydraulic and pneumatic knee, constant friction, otherwise known as a single-axis knee, variable friction, otherwise known as a cadence control, and a manual locking knee. A polycentric or a four-bar linkage knee is indicated for a transfemoral amputation, knee disarticulations, and bilateral amputations. Keep in mind that for this option, there is a variable knee center of rotation, you will have controlled flexion, the ability to walk at a moderately fast pace, and it supports increased weight compared to a constant friction knee. Moving on to a stance phase control or a weight-activated knee, this is indicated for older patients with proximal amputations. This is also indicated for patients walking on uneven terrain. Keep in mind that a stance phase control or a weight-activated knee acts like a constant friction knee in swing phase. Weight bearing through the prosthesis locks up through the high friction housing. Moving on to a fluid control, otherwise known as a hydraulic and pneumatic knee, this is indicated for active patients willing to sacrifice a heavier prosthesis for more utility and variability. Keep in mind that this option allows for variable cadence via a piston mechanism, it prevents excess flexion, and it extends earlier in the gait cycle. Moving on to a constant friction, otherwise known as a single-axis knee, this is indicated for general use, patients walking on uneven terrain, and it is the most common pediatric prosthesis. However, remember that this is not recommended for older or weaker patients. A constant friction or single-axis knee has a hinge that uses a screw or rubber pad to apply friction to the knee to decrease knee swing. It only allows a single speed of walking, and it relies on alignment for stance phase stability. Moving on to a variable friction or cadence control prosthesis, this has multiple friction pads that increases knee flexion resistance as the knee extends. It has variable walking speeds that are allowed, however, it is not very durable. Finally, a manual locking knee is a constant friction knee hinge with an extension hook. The extension lock can be unlocked to allow the knee to act like a constant friction knee. As far as lower limb prosthesis, it's important to understand the concepts of a socket, suspension systems, pylon, osseointegration, and a terminal device. So a socket is the connection between the stump and the prosthesis, and computer screening technology can decrease the time to socket fabrication. The preparatory socket may need to be adjusted several times as edema resolves. A patellar tendon bearing prosthesis is the most common for a below-knee amputation. Transfemoral or quadrilateral sockets make it hard to keep the femur in adduction. And remember that a transfemoral will allow 10 degrees of adduction and 5 degrees of flexion. As far as suspension systems, this attaches the prosthesis to a residual limb using belts, wedges, straps, and suction. As far as suction suspension, there is a standard suction and a silicone suction. Standard suction is a form-fitting rigid or semi-rigid socket which fits onto the residual limb. A silicone suction suspension is a silicone-based sock that fits over the stump and is then inserted into the socket. The silicone provides an airtight seal between the prosthesis and the amputated stump. Moving on to a pylon, this is a simple tube or shell that attaches the socket to the terminal device. There are newer styles that allow axial rotation and absorb, store, and release energy. An exoskeleton is a soft foam contoured to match the other limb with a hard outer shell. And an endoskeleton is the internal metal frame with cosmetic soft covering. As far as osseointegration, this is the direct attachment of a prosthesis to the skeleton, and this may improve the biomechanical advantage of the prosthesis and rehabilitation. Finally, a terminal device is most commonly a foot, but may take other forms. Finally, let's talk a bit about prosthetic complications. As far as general issues, the ones to know include choke syndrome, skin problems, and a painful residual limb. Choke syndrome is caused by obstructed venous outflow due to a socket that is too snug. In the acute phase of choke syndrome, you will have red, indurated skin with an orange peel appearance. In the chronic phase, you will have hemosiderin deposits and venous stasis ulcers. Skin problems to be aware of include contact dermatitis, cysts and excess sweating, as well as scar. Contact dermatitis is most commonly caused by the liner, socks, and the suspension mechanism. The treatment is removing the offending item with symptomatic treatment. As far as cysts and excess sweating, this will occur when there are signs of excess shear forces and improperly fitted components. And in the setting of a scar, you can massage and lubricate the scar for a well-healed incision. Finally, with respect to a painful residual limb, possible causes include heterotopic ossification, bony prominences, poorly fitting prostheses, neuroma formation, and insufficient soft tissue coverage. Now let's quickly talk about prosthetic complications for transtibial prostheses. You can have swing phase pistoning, which is caused by an ineffective suspension system, stance phase pistoning, which is caused by a poor socket fit, and or stump volume changes, as the stump sock may need to be changed. You can have several foot alignment abnormalities, such as an inset foot, outset foot, anterior foot placement, posterior foot placement, a dorsiflex foot, or a plantar flex foot. An inset foot will cause varus strain, circumduction, and pain. An outset foot will cause valgus strain and a broad base gait, as well as pain. Anterior foot placement will cause stable, increased knee extension with patellar pain. Posterior foot placement will cause an unstable, increased knee flexion. Keep in mind that drop-off or knee buckling can be improved by moving the foot more anterior. A dorsiflex foot will cause increased patellar pressure, and a plantar flex foot will cause drop-off and increased patellar pressure. Other complications can include pain or redness related to pressure, and prosthetic foot abnormalities, such as the heel is too soft, which leads to excessive knee extension, or the heel is too hard, which leads to excessive knee flexion and lateral rotation of the toes. That's all for this review about rehab and prosthetics. Hopefully that was helpful. Because this is a relatively lengthy topic, look out for a separate episode completely dedicated to questions about rehab and prosthetics. And hopefully this episode will have prepared you for that question review session. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.